In Luke's gospel, Luke wants to tell the story of Jesus in his own words, in the very opening words of chapter 1, in an orderly kind of way. He's using sources, he's putting all these traditions together, and he wants to lay out this story of Jesus in a way that will help us believe and follow. And so in chapter 1, we don't get the birth story of Jesus, do we? We get, ahead of that, we get the story of John the Baptist and his birth. And it starts with his parents, Zechariah and Anna. Now, Luke sets this in a big historical context, a political context, in the time of Herod, who was the king. It's sort of like saying, back in the Reagan years, or back when FDR was president. You know, it gives you a historical location for the story. But that's the secondary location as far as Luke is concerned. The primary, bigger story that's happening is God's long covenant relationship with the people of Israel. And so we have God showing up to Zechariah and to Elizabeth, faithful, devout Jews. That's what we learn about them in this short description. We learn that Elizabeth is of the lineage of Aaron, the brother of Moses. Pretty good stuff, right? We learn that Zechariah is a priest in the priestly class, and he has gone as part of his regiment assignment. He's gone to the temple now, and he's getting his once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be in the place where they light the incense and offer these holy prayers to God. These are devout, faithful Jews, and they are also at a point in their lives when parenthood has passed them by. They are later in life, and so we know that they are older and without children. Now, as soon as we know that, right, as soon as Luke shares that detail with us, we've got an older couple without a child, what do we think of immediately? Who do we think of in the Old Testament? Sarah and Abraham, right? So even though they're not named in this story, they are present in this story. They are the backdrop for this story, right? Because just like God uses them in a surprising way at a time in their lives when they laugh at God that this could be possible, the same thing for Zechariah and Elizabeth. They'd been waiting, hoping perhaps for a child, but that never was their blessing. And so now late in life, they are visited with some preposterous news that God is going to do something with them and they're going to become parents. I want to pick up the story now in verse 16. Now, this is the ongoing description of John the Baptist, the one, the forerunner of Jesus, because we've got to get to John before we get to Jesus in Luke's gospel. And so this is the ongoing description of who he is and what he will do. He will turn many sons and daughters of Israel back to their God. He will herald God's arrival in the style and strength of Elijah, that great prophet of the Old Testament, soften the hearts of parents to children, kindle devout understanding among hardened skeptics. He'll get the people ready for God. In a nutshell, that's John's mission. That's John's calling, to prepare this path for Jesus. And Zechariah says, yes, right? No, this is what Zechariah says to the angel. Do you expect me to believe this? I'm an old man, and my wife is an old woman. This is not possible. And yet the angel is opening Zechariah and Elizabeth up to this new possibility that God is doing. God always shows up at the most inconvenient times and places, right? Zechariah probably had other things on his mind that day. He probably had studied his protocols, and he didn't get to do this often, so you have to do it right when you go into that inner sanctum of the temple. And so he was probably worried about all of the duties that he was called as a priest to do that day, and the last thing he needed was God to show up, right? To mess with that. And yet here he is in the holiest place that this angel comes. Gabriel says, I'm the sentinel of God, sent especially to give you this glad news. But because you won't believe me, you'll be unable to say a word until the day of your son's birth. Every word I've spoken to you will come true on time, God's time. What would you do with news like that? Yeah, that's right. Stop talking. We sang a song at 9:30. Some of you know Revelation song. It's filled with wonder, awestruck wonder. My sense is that that's sort of the experience of Zechariah. He's overwhelmed by this. One biblical commentator suggested that the that this is not so much a punishment by the angel that he's struck with being mute, he can't say a word, but it's a blessing by God to give him time to absorb this amazing news that has been offered to them, and this amazing part that they have to play in the story of salvation. It's not a punishment, it's a blessing to give them time for that. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be Elizabeth and Zechariah? And Elizabeth says, you know, I can't believe this too. That's her reaction. Now look at this part. Meanwhile, the congregation waiting for Zechariah was getting restless, right? He'd been in there a long time. And when he came out and he couldn't speak, they knew he had seen a vision. He continued speechless and had to use sign language with the people. Have you ever been in a situation where you couldn't put something into words and you have to just try to act it out? I was playing Pictionary with my daughters down at Thanksgiving a little over a week ago. And, you know, you get to these phrases and these words and you're trying to sometimes write them out and sometimes act them out as well. And it's hard. But this is exactly what Zechariah is left to do. He can't speak, so he has to try to show the people. How would you show the people a message like this? How would you show the people a message like this? I want us, though, to sit with Zechariah's silence and his sign language today for just a moment on this first Sunday of Advent. His silence and his sign language. What would you do if you didn't have words to show people about the love of God, to show people about God's salvation story, if all you had was what you were doing and not what you're saying? I heard a great interview this week with Eric Motley. Eric Motley served for a time in George W. Bush's administration. He was in the personnel department, but that's not the important part of the story. He's written a memoir about Madison Park. It's a little historically African-American community outside of Montgomery, Alabama. It was founded by freed slaves. And when he was growing up there in the 60s and 70s, it was a tough place, not a lot of opportunity or resources. But he tells this story about being incredibly blessed by the people in his lives and this particular community and how many people invested in him. He tells a story about an older couple, his adoptive grandparents, who took him in. But first, they had taken his mother in. Mama and Daddy, as he called them, had been approached by a neighbor who had 14 children. And they asked if they would take in the youngest one, Barbara Ann. Now, this is a couple in their late 50s, had no children of their own, thought they were not going to have that opportunity, but they thought about it, they prayed about it, and they agreed to take in Barbara Ann. And when Barbara Ann turned 19 and gave birth to Eric, they took in Eric as their own son, and they raised him as their son as well. Now, they knew from an early age that he was a smart kid, he was inquisitive, he was curious, and they saw a lot of potential. But not only they saw potential, but so did the other people in his church and the other people in his school. And they wanted him to have opportunities that they had never had for themselves. He tells a story about going to church one day and being totally embarrassed by Mama and Daddy, because Mama stood up, his grandmother stood up, and during the prayer time, when they asked for joys and concerns, he said, "I want you to pray for Eric here, because Eric has dropped from the rabbits group to the turtle group in school." He says, "My grandmother didn't know much about education, like formally, but she knew that that was not a good thing. And they were bound and determined to get me back up into that rabbits group." And so her grandmother pleaded that day during the prayer time, "If any of you have books, could you bring them by the house? We want to read with him." And from that prayer request came a group of retired teachers in their 70s and 80s who started a tutoring program, not just for Eric, but also for other kids in that community, to give them the extra help that they needed, not just to get Eric back in the rabbit group, but to get other children a chance to further their education. Eric would go on to be the first one in his family to go to college and then get a master's degree at St. Andrews in Scotland and then end up in a job in the White House. He never could have imagined that future, but so many people believed in him, and he tells the story with gratitude. He says, "Mama and Daddy lived their lives instead of preached their lives," when he described their faith. Mama and Daddy lived their lives instead of preached their lives. Mama and Daddy lived their lives in a way that reflected their thoughts, their words, and their beliefs. In other words, they didn't preach a whole lot about Jesus to him. They used sign language. They showed him what it meant. They lived it every single day of their lives by their values, by their commitments, by their investment, not only in his mother, but then also in his life. And he became the beneficiary of their grace and their commitment. An older couple who never thought they'd have kids, but took him in, took his mother in, and then took him in. There's a movie out in theaters right now. It's called Wonder. And it's the movie that gave us our launching point for our Advent theme this year. You'll hear about it from time to time throughout this series in worship, and we're using it other ways throughout the church as well. It's based on a children's book. It's a story of a young boy named Augie, who was born with several birth defects and had to go through surgeries to help his hearing, help him smell, help him see better. And he has, by this stage in his life, he's gone through 20 plus surgeries. And his face is not normal. That's probably the best way to describe it. He just looks different. And so all his life, as a protective measure, he's been wearing this helmet. And this is the first day of school. He's going to go off to school. He's been homeschooled up to this point. And so he's been walked by Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson and his sister to school for the first day. And it's this delightful story of unfolding of his gifts and his sense of wonder that spreads to that community. One of the people in his path is a teacher. The teacher who always leaves his students with a mantra, if you will, or a saying, and asks them to figure out what it means, like a good teacher would do. And one of the most memorable from the movie and from the book is this: when given the choice between being right or being kind, choose kind. Choose kind. Now, this book was very popular several years ago, and it spawned a whole curriculum of resources for teachers to use in their school setting to be able to help kids accept each other with difference. And so there's a whole movement out there called Choose Kind, and resources and books and curriculum that teachers can use. And we're sort of adopting that curriculum ourselves, or adapting it for the church. Choose Kind is sort of the sub-theme that goes along with Wonder during Advent. In fact, our Advent Live group, our young adults and our young families that are doing this online devotional and conversation, that's the focus of what they're doing during the week. Choose Kind. They're talking about kindness. How do we do that? Now, we're giving you plenty of chances to choose kindness through this church. That looks a lot like the angel tree down in Fellowship Hall, because it is. The angel tree that appears in Fellowship Hall covered with tags, connecting you to ministries that go on every day in the life of this church, connections to Backpack Buddies and to Heaven's Kitchen and to the Arundel House of Hope and to Winter Relief. And this year we've adopted several families to the Salvation Army, so there are families to be adopted on that tree. That's one of the ways you can choose to be kind and to offer kindness in the world, because the world needs so much kindness and compassion. And we know that more than any time of the year right now. We'd encourage you to take one or five. There are a lot of tags this year. You're going to be hearing at the end of this worship service about the reverse Advent calendar, the chance to offer to some hungry people right in our community a meal and food and sustenance. So instead of taking a chocolate out of an Advent calendar like some of us love to, you can still do that if you want, but just also place some canned goods and some non-perishables in the bag. And then I'm most excited to tell you about the next one. I have all kinds of conversations in my office, some of them hard and sad and some of them joyful. I get to plan weddings with young couples. I get to talk to people about planning memorial services when a family member's just died. I talk to couples when they are struggling in their marriage. I talk to people trying to find their next step. But I also get joyful conversations that take place in my office. And about a month and a half ago, a woman from our church came to me and said, "I've got an idea. It happened at my mom's church, and I was wondering if we could make it happen here." She wanted to tell me that at her mom's church, they had given out money, $100 bills, and told people to go invest it in the community, go share it in the community, go do something good with it. And she said, "My husband and I would like to give you $5,000 so we can give out 50 $100 bills. And I said, really? Sounds good to me. We're always asking people for money. It's a good thing if we can give them some money for a change. And when we followed up, we talked about it some more. The good news got even better. She told me, you know, my husband said $5,000 really is not enough. We're going to give you $10,000. And so on the altar today, we've had already, we've given away about 7,000 of that 10,000 or somewhere in that neighborhood. We've been parceling out by worship service, just according to how many people we have here on a Sunday morning. So remaining on this altar today are envelopes that look like this. We're calling it our Intentional Acts of Kindness Project. And there are only a couple rules. Number one, you have to just tell us who you are, just so we can keep track of who is participating. But beyond that, we just say, be intentional and tell us your story. Like, listen to where the Holy Spirit's leading you. Listen to the need that's around you that you find in the community. You may be in the right place at the right time to help somebody because you have this in your hand. So be intentional about it. And also tell us the story so we can multiply the joy. So we can multiply the joy. During communion today, when you come forward, if there are some of you who would like to come and take one of those envelopes, we invite you to do that and participate in our intentional acts of kindness. We have all kinds of ways you can be kind, and that's just not to mention all of the ways that you can be kind in your everyday life as well. So I'm taking this challenge, this Advent. I hope you are too, to choose kind every day, or in the words of Zechariah and Mama and Daddy, here's the question. How will you use your sign language, like Zechariah and Mama and Daddy, to live your faith and not just preach your faith this Advent? How will you be a sign and witness to the goodness of God, the generosity of God, the compassion of God, the kindness of God? Choose kind. Thanks be to God. Amen.